Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We have finally arrived there for this week, and we start with pretty decent news on the economy, Jim. Not fabulous news in the February jobs report, but certainly better than it has been for the most part in the last few years, and that's that 227,000 non-farm jobs were created in the month of February. That's a net gain, of course. The overall unemployment rate stayed at 8.3%, which possibly suggests that a few more people are re-entering the labor force, and the U6 rate from the Labor Department, which factors in people who have stopped looking and are taking part-time work when they would like full-time work, is down to 14.9. I'm not sure 14.9 is ever good news, but I guess it's better than it was. So the news is that it's trickling better, but still, obviously, this economy's got a long way to go, and hopefully somebody else will be leading it forward.
Greg, I salute you. Trickling better is the very best description of this jobs report I can come up with, because all in all, creating 200-some-thousand jobs, that's keeping pace with the rate of population growth and new people coming into the workforce. Size of the workforce number, that didn't get significantly worse. The only number that kind of was really ominous in this was a decline in construction jobs. But all things considered, this manages to put us in a circumstance in which it's just good enough to stop the number from going down again. The unemployment rate is still 8.3%. That is by the standards historically, that's abysmal. And I think we've now reached, I don't know the percentage number of consecutive months of 8% unemployment or more. We're now probably in the neighborhood of 3 years.
37.
We're now more than 3 years. It's awful. Okay. This is still an awful economy that is showing slight improvement. Now, I have no doubt President Obama will tout this as a sign that everything is hunky-dory and we're moving in the right direction and, you know, his policies are working. If you want, folks who hope to see Barack Obama defeated in 2012 have a bit of a tough spot here, because we don't want to see Americans suffer any more than necessary. On the other hand, we don't want enough, faint, modest glimmers of improvement in the jobs picture to make people say, oh, Obama's policies are finally working. It just took 3 years for them to kick in, and everything's going to be hunky-dory, in the future. So a circumstance in which there is job creation, but it's not enough to get the unemployment rate to move 0.1 percentage point, might just be the sweet spot. We are seeing job creation. That's a good thing. But I don't think – you're starting to see this from Politico and folks who are definitely not on the right. 8.3% unemployment is still not a good number for Obama. The idea of it staying stagnant is not a good number for Obama. The perception has been, basically, that if the unemployment rate goes back up again, Obama's doomed. If it declines, then Obama's reelection is going to look pretty good. If it stays stagnant, I don't think that's good for the president either, and I think it'll be tough for him to argue that he's turned it around, et cetera, et cetera, if we're stuck in the neighborhood of 8.2%, 8.3%. And I think that'll really hurt people. Romney used the phrase that 8.3% unemployment is not the best America can do. It's the best America can do under this president. I think it's probably one of the best lines he's had in a while. That line will work for at least another month, and we'll see what happens next month.
Yeah, we'll find out. 2 points here, one good, one bad, I guess. The Romney campaign, if they can ever put themselves in a position to be the de facto nominee here, I've already basically let it be known that I think late April, early May, they're going to start what they're calling the economic prosecution of Barack Obama and how he's completely failed economically, which is clearly not only the number one issue in this campaign, but clearly Mitt Romney's strong suit. The bad news on this, just listening to network radio this morning, before the numbers came out, they were talking to people on the street and making it sound like everybody believes the economy's turned the corner. So you're not going to have Barack Obama claiming that, but you're going to have all his sycophants in the mainstream media claiming the same thing. So be ready. On to martini number two now, and another issue that may bode well for the Republican nominee, but unfortunately will not bode well for the tens and eventually hundreds of thousands of Americans who could get a job as a result of the Keystone XL pipeline. President Obama is just not going to allow that to happen for reasons that still befuddle me, since much of organized labor also wants this. Apparently, he has decided that he's done enough for them and can afford to offend them at least once and make his environmental friends happy. Basically, the Senate is taking up the multi-billion-dollar highway bill. They allowed some amendments to be considered. John Hoeven of North Dakota offered one that would have basically allowed for the Keystone Pipeline to be built, regardless of the president's thoughts on it. And so the president, instead of just keeping quiet, basically decided that he was going to take the time to call members of the Democratic conference in the Senate and to tell them to vote no. Here's Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor talking about that.
There's a report this morning that the president is personally making phone calls to Democratic senators he thinks might vote for the amendment, asking them not to. And frankly, it's hard to even comprehend how out of touch, how completely out of touch he is on this issue. I mean, think about it. At a moment when millions are out of work, gas prices are literally skyrocketing, and the Middle East is in turmoil, we've got a president who's up making phone calls trying to block a pipeline here at home.
Not exactly the most stirring oration there, Jim, but the points made in Senator McConnell's speech are very well founded. We've got a problem right now. We've known about this problem, and the president simply will not tap into domestic energy. We've obviously talked about this issue a number of times as he scolded and mocked Ed Henry at the White House press conference earlier this week. But the politics of this, you would think a guy so Machiavellian would eventually realize that this is good for his reelection, but he's just too ideological to let common sense prevail here.
The problem for Obama here is that he likes to say, whenever the issue of energy comes up, that he's for an all-of-the-above policy. Now, a lot of people hear that and would presume that the all-of-the-above would include all. And what Obama means is all-of-the-above except the Keystone Pipeline and except expanded drilling in the Gulf, where his administration has slowed the processing of permits and such to a crawl. He's indicated in the past that he's open to nuclear power, but we have not built any nuclear power plants in his 3 years of his administration. I don't see any serious movement on that front. We have not built any gas refineries in the past, I think since 1970s in this country. There has been a movement to build one up in the Dakotas, and unsurprisingly, his allies in the environmental movement have done everything possible to slow it down and to make sure it doesn't come to pass. This administration has sent out very conflicting signals on fracking and whether they're going to fully support this. And obviously the industry is very nervous about investing heavily in a type of technology and development that the administration could turn around and ban in any given day. Oh, by the way, this is an administration that periodically still makes noises about cap and trade and, using the EPA to regulate CO2, et cetera, et cetera. So he's for doing everything we can for energy dependence, except all of those things, which if you make all those exceptions, you're not really for an all-of-the-above policy. This is, one of the ways that Obama likes to have it both ways. I have, said that he likes to say things that come with an expiration date. And maybe I even need to tweak that saying that he will say things that really don't mean the plain meaning of the words, but in his head, it has some completely different meaning, which means is I am for all of the above that I like.
Jim, on to martini number three now, and I don't know how most people spent their Thursday night, but Jim was rubbing elbows with some pretty fancy folks as he checked out the premiere of the HBO movie, which I guess will officially premiere on HBO Saturday night, called Game Change. It's from the book that came out following the 2008 campaign, and this focused, of course, on the McCain selection of Sarah Palin as vice president. Most conservatives expected a hatchet job. Jim, what did you see?
It was not a relentless hatchet job, which was not to say that it was not a hatchet job. by the way, you say I was rubbing elbows. There were more than a few people like, what are you doing here? The producers were kind enough to invite National Review. I have a review and assessment that should be up on the site a little bit later today. If you are a fan of Sarah Palin, you're not going to like a lot of this movie. To their credit, like I said, it is not a relentless hatchet job, and there are a couple scenes that are very sympathetic to her. I think probably the one that surprised me the most is a scene that depicts the parents of children with Down syndrome going up to Sarah Palin and thanking her for talking about trig and talking about the decision to have that child and what a child with special needs can bring to their lives. You could kind of tell in the audience there was almost the uncomfortable shifting in chairs in this sense of like, oh, we thought we were going to see Sarah Palin the monster. And here's this scene of this enormous, deeply touching impact she had on ordinary Americans' lives. But there's plenty of Sarah Palin, the diva, and plenty of Sarah Palin as, the dunce and all the other stuff you kind of figured that a liberal movie would make. Now, what I would observe, and I think, I don't want to, to give credit to the cast, they're trying their very darndest to perform the heck out of this and to make this story interesting. One of the things I can't quite get past here is that the movie is basically showing things that we all saw with our own eyes 3 years ago. It's really great that Julianne Moore can imitate the vocal intonations and accent and mannerisms of Sarah Palin so well, like when she gives her convention speech. Everyone in America watched it on TV. I was there. I've seen this. I don't need to see Julianne Moore imitating something that I just saw. So you have a bunch of scenes that are basically they have the debate scene, they have her opening speech in Ohio, they have all these scenes that we already the Katie Couric interview, we already saw all this. So why am I watching an actress reenact something that I already saw myself? So then you have scenes that are behind the scenes of the McCain campaign. Here's where the filmmakers get into a real problem, because I have a copy of Game Change. As soon as I saw the trailer, I started checking it. There's a bunch of stuff in this movie that was not in the book, and as you know, people involved have said, did not happen. In the trailer, McCain is told that none of these old white guys are going to do it for you for winning. So he says, well, then get me a woman. It's kind of this dismissive, kind of this sense of, I don't care who she is, just get me a woman. Get me a running mate with ovaries, basically, is the connotation of that comment. And, you know, Steve Schmidt has said, John McCain never said that. There's a scene in which Sarah Palin is so ignorant of foreign policy, she has to be pointed out that where Germany is on a map, that they were the primary antagonists in World War I and World War II, and that they formed the Axis powers with Japan. And she dutifully writes this down on a note card as if it's new information. The briefers who worked with Palin said that never happened. That is absolute, you know, nonsensical fiction. There's these scenes with Schmidt reacting to her Katie Couric interview and saying, oh my God, what have we done? Schmidt said he never said that. The filmmakers, when they've decided to do the behind-the-scenes things, have tweaked things a little. Not overwhelmingly, but just little touches here and there. And lo and behold, the touches make Sarah Palin look dumber and make John McCain look more craven and make the McCain campaign look more chaotic and disorganized. And look, Greg, we watched this, like I said, with our own eyes. We know the McCain campaign was disorganized. We know that they were not a well-run machine. Why they felt the need to make a two-hour, big star, glamorous, pull-out-all-the-stops movie to depict this, I'm just not quite sure I understand the point of all this. Unless, of course, the people who were making this movie thought that at this point Sarah Palin would be running for president and that the country needed a two-hour-long attack ad on how terrible she is. Picture having Oscar-nominated actors reading a transcript of the recent Republican presidential debates, and you have an idea of how exciting this movie is. Like, I'd love to see Daniel Day-Lewis reading the words of Rick Santorum. I'm sure he would do it well, but I'm not really sure I see the point of it. And I'm not sure that there was much of a theme or lesson or moral of this story other than vet your running mates. Enormous amount of effort, enormous amount of money and star power and you know stuff put in to tell a story that we all already know. For those who are skeptical going into this, I think a lot of your skepticism will be rewarded. I don't want to say that the actors and everyone involved did a terrible job. They I can tell they're really trying hard, but this is a movie we've already seen. And honestly, I'll stick to reality. I'm not really sure I see the need for, you know, dramatizations of historical events that we all saw and were, you know, historically the equivalent of happening last week.
Was the popcorn good?
No popcorn. They gave us chocolate at the end, though.
Oh, man, that's not on the Michelle Obama-approved list, but glad they gave it to you anyway. Jim, I hope you enjoyed at least being there. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Looking forward to it.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.